week we set an example for our children of giving generously and with an open heart by collecting non-perishable food items for the local food pantries. If you have an item to share, please bring them forward during the prelude or ask a child to bring them forward for you. Our fifth annual Blessing of the Animal service will be held next Sunday, August 27th. Pets and small livestock are welcome in the building. Full-size horses, cows, zoo animals really should stay out in the yard. During the service, you'll have a chance to bring your pet up for a blessing. Please plan to have your animal under control or in a container or on a leash at all times. Fur, fins, scales, wings, no legs, four legs, eight legs. You sure about the eight legs? They're all welcome. Children without pets are encouraged to bring a stuffed animal so that they can participate. For those of us who'd like to be present but not too near the eight-legged creatures, there's a no animal zone in these pews over here. And after the service, we'll go out to the yard and meet the zoo animals. So come join us, please. It will be a very nice service. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming LCUUC activities, events, which everyone is welcome to attend. So please come and explore what this community can mean for you. LCUUC is a UUA-affirmed welcoming congregation, and we are open to all people, regardless of who you love or how you present your gender. At this time, please silence your electronics, and we'll begin our service. Thank you. last of you. You later jealous. Out of the flames of fear, we rise with courage of our deepest convictions to stand for justice, inclusion, and peace. Out of the flames of scrutiny, we rise to proclaim our faith with hope to heal a fractured and hurting world. Out of the flames of doubt, we rise to embrace the mystery, wonder, and awe. Out of the flames of hate, we rise with the force of love, love that celebrates our shared humanity. Out of the flames, we rise. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, "We Are a Gentle, Angry People," number 170 in the Gray Hymnal.
That try men's souls, said Thomas Paine in December 1776, and we say it again today. We seem to be in a tug of war between two visions of virtue. We hold our vision, our principles, with passion, and it is painful to witness events that seem to mock them. Our first principle, the worth and dignity of every person, means that we can't regard the white supremacist violence in Charlottesville as just another point of view. A green sanctuary congregation can't help but be in pain at the rolling back of environmental protections. A congregation invested in family promise can't help but grind its teeth at the effort to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. A congregation in a denomination founded on the value of a free and reasonable pursuit of truth and meaning cannot help but be horrified to see science denigrated. And if we embrace the principle of the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, how terrified and horrified must we be at the saber rattling? Do you, like me, find it almost impossible to have conversations with some people at the supermarket, your neighbors, some family members? Do you wake up at night worrying, seething with indignation? Does the conflict between how you value people and how you're feeling make your head spin and your soul ache? We find ourselves immersed in ambiguity of muddled right and wrong, plunged into the paradox of defaulting on our values in order to defend them. Assaulted by ambiguity, we feel consternation and confusion. Plagued by paradox, we are perturbed. Come, let us be perturbed together. Take a moment, please, to introduce yourself or say hello to the people around you this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Christy Bowden, and I am honored to welcome you to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. Welcome you with your broken heart and you with your anxious spirit. Welcome to you with your stubborn ego and to you with your quiet insecurities. Welcome atheists and Christians, Muslims and Jews, straights, gays, lesbians, bisexuals. Welcome transgenders. Whether you're here to engage or observe or just rest because you feel like our country is off our tracks and your search for any semblance of normalcy or peace leaves you exhausted, thank you for joining us. We work to bring a message of hope and grace to an imperfect world. And today we'll consider the painful pursuit of tolerance in an intolerant world. We have no easy answers, no quick fixes. what we do have rooted in the values of this faith is our connection to one another and to the life-giving source that moves within and among us. So again, welcome. We are so very pleased that you have decided to join us here today.
Each Sunday, we pass these baskets to acknowledge, wait, you don't get them yet, to acknowledge the generosity that makes LCUUC possible. Most of us put electronic dollars into electronic baskets through some method of automatic payment. Nevertheless, we pass these baskets. We pass them with gratitude, reverently. We pass them joyfully. And if you have an extra dollar, drop it in as the basket goes by. The morning offering will now be gratefully given and received.
Thank you. for these gifts given and received for the work of this community. As a community of minds and hearts and hands, this is the time in our service where we come together to bear witness to one another's lives, to entrust what matters deeply to us and to this community. Before the service, you are always welcome to silently light a candle at the table, but during the service, we speak aloud and the worship associate lights candles for us. If you would like to share a joy or concern, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
This is Chris in the back. Please light a candle of joy. My brother had a baby girl last week. My first niece and Kaya's first cousin. Mackenzie Margaret.
This is Gus, my partner finally after 10 years of working to a point of stress and whatever, being in sales. He finally quit his job on Monday. And we're both absolutely delighted, and I don't care if he does get another job. I'll see if I'll get another job if I have to. Thank you.
I am Marie Claude, and we have the great joy today to have a very, very dear friend of ever from Arizona, Joan.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Welcome.
Welcome.
This is Claire. I would like to wish a very special lady sitting in front of me, Claudette, a very happy birthday today.
Out the candles after the service.
And my name's Ray, and I'm a little joy here. I had my right shoulder replaced a little over a week ago, and I'm hoping to be back to 100% in just a few weeks.
And we light the last candle for those joys and sorrows which we hold deeply, but which we have not named here today.
Paradox and Wonderment by Reverend Lisa Bovey Kemper. When it happened, social media and news outlets were peppered with announcements and commentary stating that Fred Phelps had been admitted into hospice. He was at the edge of death. Fred Phelps is known for being the leader of the infamous Westboro Baptist who picket funerals and other events holding signs which rudely blame most of the country's ills on homosexuals. The commentary ranged from, "Good riddance, now we can pick at him," to, "I will not give my time or energy to this person, alive or dead," to, "Maybe we should be grateful to him for bringing such an extremist position and making the middle ground a little more attractive." I found myself wondering how to hold in my heart the two truths that I saw. The first is that Fred Phelps preached hate and intolerance. His rhetoric was surely responsible for suicides and hate crimes, for children being thrown out and disowned, and countless other awful things. The second, though, is that Fred Phelps was a human being, a person with inherent worth. We don't give up our inherent worth when we do awful things. And I think the reasons this is true has more to do with us than it does with Phelps himself. It's even more complicated than we might think. According to the Topeka Capital Journal, in the mid-50s, Phelps was reportedly the only lawyer in Topeka, Kansas, who would take anti-discrimination cases related to school segregation after the Brown versus Board of Education decision. Really? In the 80s, he was recognized for his work in civil rights. I don't know what caused him to shift his focus to demonizing the LGBT community, but that's not the point here. The point is to illustrate the dramatic complexity we can see in a single human being. Political columnist Matthew Raza says, "It is in our nature to believe that there is an impermeable dichotomy between what makes one person a hero and another a villain. Yet Phelps proves not only that they can coexist, but that they can often spring from the same source." Romantic poet John Keats is well known for his coining of the phrase negative capability, which is when a person is capable of being in uncertainties, mysteries, and doubts without any irritable reaching after fact and reason. He called it the distinction of man of achievement, or the thinking man, which I interpret more inclusively as any person who seeks to be reflective, any person who seeks to understand the world more deeply. The ability to rest in the midst of uncertainty without trying to explain things is quite challenging. It has been said that the human capacity to reason is the thing that sets us apart from other mammals. But I tend to agree more with those who suggest that our capacity for empathy is what sets us apart. And an ability to empathize, perhaps, relies on one's ability to sit in that space of unknowing, of inaction, of deep listening, of deep feeling. So the work of the thinking person, which I would also describe as the work of the religious community, is to rest in the midst of uncertainty without trying to explain things. This is not an easy feat, of course, because we humans have a need to explain things. It's natural. But living in the uncertainty can be its own spiritual practice. In a literary sense, the purpose of a paradox is to point out a truth. However, Phelps is not a literary trope, but a real-life example. His is the kind of paradox that is hard to reconcile because his good works and his hate speech have both happened on a national stage. We don't know Phelps personally, so we don't know the true complexity of his experience. Either way, the last three decades of his life were spreading hate. So why not side with the commenters who said they wouldn't give this man any more of their time and energy? What do we gain from allowing ourselves to see the complexity of this particular human life? When we allow ourselves to see the whole picture of a human life, we are more able to understand that our own choices have the potential to be both life-giving and harmful. I don't know what Phelps' motivation was for his civil rights work. Neither do I truly know what his motivation was for his hate speech. But I know that his actions caused pain and suffering to many. Your life and my life are generally played out on a much smaller stage, and our choices tend not to be so dramatically positive or negative. Nonetheless, we are capable of both hurting and healing choices. An essay about Keats suggests that it is easy for us to respond to uncertainty and mystery with tension and restlessness, which causes conflict. Keats' framing of negative capability is a positive one, which calls us to refuse the conflict and embrace the creativity that can come from these challenging experiences. So we sit in the uncertainty, and we add our own interpretation to our experience. And we find the generative and creative energy that comes when we don't fight the discomfort of paradox. When we allow ourselves to sit in the mystery without reaching to fix it or understand it, we can look at the situation with curiosity instead of fear. And when we approach our lives, especially the difficult parts, with curiosity, it's a little easier to face the unknown. Life is full of ambiguity, and we have an opportunity to cultivate our willingness to embrace uncertainty, live with mystery, and make peace with it. Negative capability offers us a way to approach paradox and move through to curiosity, to approach the world with wonderment and openness. You are a paradox, an untapped reservoir of possible outcomes. And our work is to reflect and engage in the work of becoming together. May it be so. Please stay seated and join in our song response this morning. Let us find the courage to live peacefully in a world that is too complex to have a single set of beliefs. Let us find a balance between competing truths, understanding there is no final arrangement that will end conflict, only endless searching and adjusting. Let us live modestly with the courage to rest in anxiety and the grit to endure the pain of uncertainty. Let us abandon certainty and absolutism and approach life with curiosity, creativity, and learning. Please join me in a moment of silent meditation or quiet reflection.
Excuse me. I have 1,000 words. I'm going to be blunt and fail to tie my thoughts together nicely. So I'm giving you fair warning and this outline up front. I am going to tell you I am angry. I'm not going to explain that. I'm going to assume you feel the same way too. I'm going to give you a list of paradoxes, conundrums, and quandaries resulting from principles I hold. We are all faced with these, and I am not going to resolve them. I believe they do not have any one solution. I'm going to give you a short list of actions. I am not going to say they will fix the world or make things better, but I believe that we all need to do something with our anger. We need to produce something from what we have. For this reason, I have titled this reflection with the Latin phrase ab asino lanum. It means wool from an ass, which has been interpreted in the same way as the phrase blood from a stone, meaning impossible. I'm going to ask you to give that phrase a new meaning, making something good and useful, wool, out of obstinacy. Don't be a sheep, but continue to make good wool. Let's begin. I am angry. No, I'm not saying that right. I am angry. Angry enough to want to punch things, especially the people making me angry. I hate the haters. And that statement is a problem because it turns on itself, becomes self-referential, and implodes. So take a deep breath. Do not lose your anger, but step back from any hate. Go back to your principles. And for a moment, think. I am a tolerant person. I support the rule of law. I espouse democratic principles. These things seem obvious and simple, and I want them to work in bringing about a world I like being in, one in which I am not angry, anxious, or afraid. But these principles have imperfections. One, the paradox of tolerance, as described by Karl Popper, a philosopher of science and defender of liberal democracy and the principles of social criticism. Popper wrote, "Unlimited tolerance must lead to the disappearance of tolerance. If we extend unlimited tolerance even to those who are intolerant, if we are not prepared to defend a tolerant society against the onslaught of the intolerant, then the tolerant will be destroyed and tolerance with them." In this formulation, I do not imply, for instance, that we should always suppress the utterance of intolerant philosophies, as long as we can counter them by rational argument and keep them in check by public opinion. Suppression would certainly be unwise, but we should claim the right to suppress them, if necessary, even by force. For it may easily turn out that they are not prepared to meet us on the level of rational argument, but begin by denouncing all argument. They may forbid their followers to listen to rational argument because it is deceptive, and teach them to answer arguments by use of their fists and pistols. We should therefore claim, in the name of tolerance, the right not to tolerate the intolerant. Think about how this applies to the concept of freedom of speech. Think about how it applies to those people who are unwilling to condemn intolerance. Two, the conundrum of equality of law. In 1790, William Blake, artist, poet, visionary, wrote, "One law for the lion and ox is oppression." Now, there are many interpretations of what this statement means, which you can explore on your way to becoming a Blake scholar. But think about it using this example, which is a quote from the writer Anatole France. "The law, in its majestic equality, forbids the rich as well as the poor to sleep under bridges, to beg in the streets, and to steal bread." Or let's be more plain and use Blake's example of the lion and the oxes. Ask yourself, what are the effects of a law which forbids the eating of meat in a society made up of lions and oxes? Answer, the lions starve. This indicates two things. One, that laws can be intentionally crafted in such a way as to be harmful to a specific group or groups. Think about Jim Crow laws. And two, that distinctions within a generalized class can be very important, For example, both ox and lion are in the general class of animals, but the distinction of carnivore and herbivore is significant in regards to laws about food options. The more diverse a community is, the more carefully laws need to be created. Think about how this applies to voter ID laws, gun ownership laws, reproductive rights. 3, the quandary of democracy. At its base, democracy is founded on a majority ruling over a minority. A well-built democracy has controls in place to protect what are defined as basic rights of all individuals, but it also requires an ongoing respect of all minorities and a recognition by elected officials that even those who did not vote for them are part of who they represent. Just as the intolerant can take advantage of the tolerant and destroy tolerance as a whole, democratic methods and principles can be leveraged against democracy itself to tear it down. So what do we do? 1, as Popper suggests, we apply our right to not tolerate the intolerant. We do this not by suppressing the freedom of speech, but by critiquing the things being said, by expressing offense at the intolerance, and by demanding that our elected officials do the same. 2, we work to represent not only ourselves, but all those of our community that are being dismissed, ignored, and injured. 3, we put our names, our faces, and our bodies, as well as our voices, into the activities. Sign petitions, join protests, be present. 4, we apply modesty. As David Brooks writes in the New York Times op-ed called How to Roll Back Fanaticism, the most powerful answer to fanaticism is modesty. Modesty is an epistemology directly opposed to the conspiracy-mongering mindset. It means having the courage to understand that the world is too complicated to fit into any one political belief system. It means understanding that there are no easy answers or malevolent conspiracies that can explain the big political questions or the existential problems. Progress is made by finding balance between competing truths, between freedom and security, diversity and solidarity. There is no final argument that will end conflict, just endless searching and adjustment. Or, as Unitarians would say, I don't have all the answers, but I support the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. 5, apply outraged love. As Ruby Sales, an African-American social activist who began her work in the 1960s era of civil rights, said in an interview, love is not antithetical to being outraged. Let's be very clear about that. And love is not antithetical to anger. There are two kinds of anger. There's redemptive anger, and there's non-redemptive anger. Redemptive anger is the anger that moves you to transformation and human upbuilding. Non-redemptive anger is the anger that white supremacy roots itself in. 6, get out your Bob Marley. Put an earworm in your ear. Get up. Stand up. Stand up for your rights. And last, think and act. This list is not complete. It is waiting for you to build it, to make the wool. Please stay seated and join in our sung response.
Amen. Yeah.
to Bless the World by Rebecca Parker. Your gifts, whatever you discover them to be, can be used to bless or curse the world. The mind's power, the strength of the hands, the reaches of the heart, the gift of speaking, listening, imagining, seeing, waiting. Any of these can be used to feed the hungry, bind up wounds, welcome the stranger, praise what is sacred, do the work of justice, or offer love. Any of these can draw down the prison door, hoard bread, abandon the poor, obscure what is holy, comply with injustice, or withhold love. You must answer this question: what will you do with your gifts? Choose to bless the world. The choice to bless the world can take you into solitude, to search for the sources of power and grace, native wisdom, healing, and liberation. More, the choice will draw you into community, the endeavor shared, the heritage passed on, the companionship of the struggle, the importance of keeping faith, the life of ritual and praise, the comfort of human friendship, the company of earth, the chorus of life welcoming you. None of us alone can save the world. Together, that is another possibility waiting. The choice to bless the world is more than an act of will, a moving forward into the world with the intention to do good. It is an act of recognition, a confession of surprise, a grateful acknowledgement that in the midst of a broken world, unspeakable beauty, grace, and mystery abide. There is an embrace of kindness that encompasses all life, even yours. And while there is injustice, anesthetization, or evil, there moves a holy disturbance, a benevolent rage, a revolutionary love, protesting, urging, insisting, that which is sacred will not be defiled. And those who bless the world live their life as a gesture of thanks for this beauty and this rage. We have some time for a polylog. A few minutes for a polylog. If you have thoughts you would like to share, raise your hand and an usher will bring the mic. Please be brief so everyone has an opportunity.
This is Gus. In the purity of Western thought, which seeks to gather all things into the same, which is able to categorize and make distinctions and whatever, the Eastern religions, theosophies, if you will, had been able to show the limitations of that. The fact that a thing itself can be something other than itself as well shows that our whole notions of looking at things as they are, as if there was a fence around them, just betrays the fact that life is like a river, and a substance is not just sitting there. It sits there because we say it does, and this is the way something is, and we hold on to that because it's comfortable, because our definitions make us feel good that we have the world under control in some way. But we can't control the world. We can't control other people, and we can barely control our own behavior. So I want to thank you for the service. I think you hit on a number of really, really good points. And I'd like to discuss with Paul afterwards his solutions to some of those paradoxes, which I never mind.
I think you may find Paul in the social hall afterwards. Yeah.
This is Jerry. I especially resonated with Paul's talk about the paradoxes. And I'm very conflicted with what's going on right now. On one hand, I totally disagree with the premises of the Nazis and of the white supremacists. But on the other hand, I disagree with the idea that I have been hearing more and more that these people should not be allowed to speak. So I think we should be very careful to avoid being too self-righteous and disregarding the rights of others.
Not sure if I'm allowed to speak in the polylog, but I'm going to put in place my freedom of speech. This was the most difficult welcome to write today, because we talk so much about every person being welcome here, and I'm writing it thinking, if a white supremacist walked in, would I be able to welcome that person? And what rules would I want to put around his participation here? And what if he wanted to speak up during the polylog? Would I be able to live the values that, you know, we all espouse? And it's a terrible, terrible challenge and conflict within, but you know, this idea of sitting in the uncertainty of that is a big one. Uh-oh, Amy's going to respond.
Oh, that's it. Give me an opening. Hi, it's Amy. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because the paradox continues even there. Because when they walk in this door, they're a blank slate. So we would say to them, yes, you are welcome. Come in. Because all people are welcome, but all ideas absolutely are not. And the minute they said, well, I believe that being white is the supreme thing, or I believe that being white is the central, you know what? That idea isn't welcome here. We respect your individual worth. We respect your dignity. We respect your potential. And we don't respect one little bit what just came out of your mouth. So you can stay and listen. We give you no forum, because we don't. Oppression and hatred are not a valid point of view. So we don't cede the floor to those. But I am so glad you brought that up. Thank you.
Thank you.
We discussed this at Sangha on Thursday night. And one of the things that came out of the discussion that often goes unrecognized, we talk about what we call the triangle of death. And it means that in any confrontation or conflict, there's a perpetrator and a victim and an enabler. And what we don't recognize is that we are all of those. And that in our lives, we make choices. And we can energetically be the victim, we can be the perpetrator, or we can enable. And so the way we're going to change the world is to recognize that in ourselves and to choose wisely and with love. And because we can't change other people. Mm-mm. We can only change us.
If I can toss in one last comment, it's becoming increasingly obvious to me that the real problem here is the narrative underlying the positions that people take in their lives. And so that there's a challenge of paying attention to the narrative. And it's pretty hard to do that if you don't listen.
We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Please rise in body or spirit and join us in singing our closing hymn this week, Open the Window, Children, number 1022 in the Teal Hymnal.
Let the dove fly in. Open the window, let the dove fly in.
times do try our souls. Consternation is our companion. So let us summon the courage of our convictions. May we maintain faith that the arc of the universe, even with its wrinkles and crinkles, does indeed bend toward justice. Blessed be.
Thank you.